Indeed, thank you for joining us right here on Channel Africa, South Africa's external service into sub-Saharan Africa. Thank you for joining us on our various platforms on DSTV Channel 802. And also thank you for joining us on OpenView on the platform Channel 628. And you can also find us on our website on www.channelafrica.co.za. Well, today we're going to be continuing with our series on artificial intelligence for our program. We'll be focusing on the impact of artificial intelligence in health and the medical sector. What changes are we likely to see in this area? Can it be applied in medicine? And if so, how so? And does artificial intelligence look different in the medical or health industry? Well, to help us to answer some of these questions, we're joined on the line by Dr. Anna Lewis. She woke up very early for us. She's in the United States, so we do take her time very much not for granted, and we appreciate her giving us time here on the African continent. That's Dr. Anna Lewis. She's a research associate at the E.J. Safra Center for Ethics at Harvard University. She works in bioethics, particularly on ethical, legal, and social issues for genomic technologies. And we'll ask her more about her career and how she came to that, because I think we need to also understand careers in this particular field. We also have Peter Reed, who's the head of artificial intelligence at Mint Group. Mint Group is a Microsoft Gold IT consultancy and systems integrator providing innovation and disruption in the digital age. Joining us once again on our program, we had him in our first program of artificial intelligence. We have Mashendra Naidu from South Africa. He is a PhD fellow at the University of KwaZulu-Natal School of Law. Thank you all for giving us your time. Now, let me start this conversation with you, Dr. Anna Lewis. Thank you for giving us your time and waking up very early there in the United States.
You're welcome. Nice to be here.
Now, let's unpack just what you do in your field, because I think we need to understand careers, that they're shifting and changing. And there's so many things that are accelerating when it comes to issues of technology. What do you actually do in your field, Dr. Anna Lewis?
So I work in what's called the ethical, legal, and social implications of genomic technologies. And when the Human Genome Project was funded 20 years ago, they set aside money to think about some of these questions. Because when a new technology is developed, you often have ways in which you can anticipate it might impact society, it might cause novel ethical issues and a need for more regulation. So I think mostly about new genetic technologies, and the sort of contextual pieces that wrap around those technologies. People are also talking about having fields like this for things like AI and AI in healthcare as well. So the type of work I can do ranges from conceptual normative analysis to doing empirical work, where you think about, for example, how will a new technology impact a certain group of people, where you can go out and talk to them, and you can also test what happens when they interact with new technology.
Well, let's unpack that, because it's important to understand the shifts in this area, Dr. Anna Lewis. Have you seen some changes in this particular area, especially when it comes to artificial intelligence? It's something that has been emphasized, especially in the last 2 years. I don't know, it's because of COVID-19 impacts. Have you seen shifts?
I think that the main debate from my point of view continues to be the fact that we have a vast, vast amount of research in this area, tens of thousands of publications per year, but we're seeing very little concrete impact on people, and there are various reasons for that that we can talk about, and in particular the sort of promise that artificial intelligence in healthcare can help people all around the world, and we're still falling very, very far short of that. For reasons that are in common across a lot of different applications of this technology, which includes the fact that it's very hard to transfer the awesome results that we're getting in research, just based on data, it's very hard to transfer those awesome results into advantages to individual patients, here in the US, but even more so around the world.
Okay, let me bring in our other guests into this discussion, and we'll come back to some of those insights that you are questioning there and bringing forth in this discussion, Dr. Anna Lewis. But let me bring in Peter Reed, Head of Artificial Intelligence at Mint Group. Peter, thank you for your time as well.
Hi, great to be here.
Let's unpack what you do in terms of being head of artificial intelligence. Tell us a little bit about also Mint Group and your work there, because I think that will also inform dynamics for this conversation.
Yeah, sure. So the Mint Group is a group of companies, five businesses in total that have been around for 20 years about. Our unit is the artificial intelligence unit of the Mint Group. We focus exclusively on AI and almost exclusively on computer vision portions of AI. And so essentially we do a balance of things. We have a set of projects that allows for easy implementation of computer vision projects, regardless of the form, so ranging from healthcare to finance, et cetera. And then we have a set of products that enables identity verification, onboarding, and customer flows. So really in the eKYC and customer experience space.
Okay, and then what does that mean in terms of the kind of work that you do as the head of this department?
Sure. So, as the head of the department, I'm responsible largely for sales, marketing, obviously running the business, conceptualizing projects. I have a very strong technical team that does the design and implementation of the project. So really my job is dealing with customers, interacting with them in terms of what is it that AI could do to assist? Because very much AI is quite a nebulous term that is little understood at the moment, although it's in the media quite a bit. So I would say my main focus is on designing and implementing solutions for customers that will really take the best of AI and the pain points that they're experiencing in their particular area, and solving them. Our goal as Mint Intelligent Insights AI units is really to use advanced technology to solve long-standing problems and to improve people's lives. So in the healthcare space, that would be the idea of taking AI and improving healthcare to the general public, both in the public and private space. And that's a range of things, from the really flashy news headline gathering ideas such as scanning X-rays and MRIs for the presence of something like a tumor through a machine, which can do pretty much the same efficacy as a human but doesn't really get tired, all the way down to very mundane areas, but I would say even more applicable, such as how do we use AI and supporting technology to improve the service delivery in the public healthcare space in South Africa and Africa? And while those kind of projects are a little bit more pedestrian, I guess you could say, we believe they would have sort of a much far-reaching impact in communities in South Africa and Africa.
Peter, let me ask the question in terms of what I've asked Dr. Anna Lewis in, have you seen an acceleration of the usage of artificial intelligence, especially in the last 2 years? Seems like there is a growth in terms of interest internationally in light of artificial intelligence and its usage in different industries, such as the health industry.
Yeah, so I mean, AI is a new technology, so it follows pretty much the pattern of any new emerging and sort of semi-radically different technology. We've seen it follow the hype cycle in many industries, including the healthcare industry. So, it will become the buzzword, everybody will talk about it, but not really know what to do with it. It really hits the top of the hype cycle when everyone says we want AI, and not really sure why we want it or where we want it. It's gone through the trough of disillusionment where we realize that it's actually a limited technology, just like any other new tech. And we're kind of stabilizing now. So I would say absolutely, but we have gone through those cycles. The second dimension to that, I guess, would be that there are two ways I think you can think of applying AI in something like healthcare. The first is a direct application, where we take our radiographers, and we augment or add to our system with things like analyzing scans for tumors with a machine. The second one is indirect, where you have the underlying tools and technology adopting AI that healthcare would use. So as an example, healthcare providers have IT systems, and those IT systems are vulnerable to ransomware attacks. The underlying antivirus systems are now very much dependent on AI, but that is an indirect application, and that is far more pervasive because as those tools become better and embed AI, it becomes more prevalent in healthcare. I would say the direct applications, typically in our markets in South Africa and Southern Africa, we lag about 2 years behind the Western markets. The Western, especially the US and Europe, are starting to see a pretty good uptick in terms of direct applications of AI in healthcare. In South Africa, we're still climbing out of the trough, so we're starting to see interest, we're starting to explore a lot of pilots, a lot of POCs. But we also have unique problems. So we have resource scarcity problems in South Africa. We have distribution problems. We have, slightly different problems to the Western countries. So I think it's going to take a little bit longer for that type of direct application to become firmly entrenched.
Let me bring Mishandra Naidu, and we'll go back to Dr. Lewis now. He's a PhD fellow at the University KwaZulu-Natal School of Law. Thank you, Mishandra, for coming back to our program once again.
Not a problem, and thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
I mean, as a student or someone who's pursuing this from an academic level, tell us a little bit about your interests and around how you view the shifts in AI when it comes to health. It seems like from Dr. Anna Lewis and Peter Reed that we're still at the early ages when it comes to the health sector.
Sure. So I, as you mentioned, a PhD fellow at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. What I'm really researching is how AI would or should rather impact legal reform. So really taking into account some of the novel issues that AI poses in all aspects of the law. So from patent law, which is the particular focus of my doctorate, but I also do other work in terms of healthcare. So looking at the National Health Act, for example, and other health policies. So as you know, South Africa currently is going undergoing reform. And taking into account a lot of these issues posed by AI, for example, we recently had the Presidential Committee report on the Fourth Industrial Revolution and AI, and it seems that the government is actually implementing sort of an AI strategy in the next few years. So we'll see how that takes us and where it goes. So in terms of my interest, I just really enjoy looking at this from the perspective of how society is actually changing and how human involvement is really being altered by the use of these technologies. Interestingly enough, a lot of people have the concern that AI is there to replace human beings, but that's not really the way it's going globally or in South Africa. It's really just there to assist human beings. It's there to assist in the healthcare perspective. It's there to assist healthcare practitioners and patients in making the process a lot more efficient, a lot more effective. So really, AI in the medical field can take various forms. It's still made up really of the same components, such as with the algorithm and the hardware, which is the case, the training data and input data, which is used for the output, but it can take the form of an actual machine that's kept in the healthcare facility, such as those that are used to make administrative tasks a lot more efficient, so just improving workflow, and also patient management and communication. So, but it can also be used as a medical device, for example, for diagnostics or surgery or pharmaceutical dispensing. So we're looking at many different applications in the healthcare field in which really it's just making the process a lot easier. And if we're looking at in South Africa in particular, we have a lot of constraints in terms of infrastructure, but also we have a lot of clinics in far-off areas where this technology can really be useful where there's lax capacity.
And also in terms of that, we heard Peter Reed speaking around the fact that we still have a lack of kind of resource capacity in the African continent. But Dr. Anna Lewis says they have different challenges in a developed country such as that in terms of how it has direct impact into the end user or the client or the patient. What are your thoughts in those different limitations and also challenges?
Okay, so that's a good question. There are many challenges, actually, in using this technology in healthcare. The first would be, from a legal perspective, the legislative frameworks that we have. We do have some really good protective legislation like the PIA that came into force from the 1st of July this year. But AI does raise some questions in some of the other legal frameworks that we have, for example, the National Health Act, the Medicines and Related Substances Act. It really poses questions to these things of whether they're adequate as they are. And a lot of my research has shown thus far that they're actually inadequate for some of your more adaptive algorithms. And those are the ones that are really being talked about on the international scale. Then we have some other issues such as, you know, data transfer agreements when we're dealing with data coming in the country or coming out of the country from other countries who have lax legislation and what's required of that. And also just building databases here in South Africa. What powers AI really is the data behind it. And the more data that you have, the more high-quality data that you have, the better the functionality of the AI. So we have many issues in amongst all the other mentioned ones, for example, our ICT issues, our infrastructure issues, and so forth and so forth. But there is a lot of investment and there is a lot of talking going around on how to improve these things. So in the future, we will hopefully see a lot of change that's for the better and which will result in, you know, palpable benefits to patients.
Sure. Let me take a quick break and we'll come to Dr. Anna Lewis, who is a research associate at the E.J. Safra Center for Ethics at Harvard University, Peter Reed, head of Artificial Intelligence at Mint Group, and Mashandra Naidu, who is a PhD fellow at the University of KwaZulu-Natal's School of Law. I know that we spent a chunk of our interview this morning really unpacking what these three individuals do, but I think it's very important because these careers are changing and some of them are fairly new and advancing very quickly, and others in a pace whereby is dependent on the work that's been done in artificial intelligence. But me and you might not know the kind of work that they do, and it's important for us to understand those particular functions. But when we come back, we'll ask some of those questions that I asked at the beginning of the program. How does AI impact health and medical fields? What changes are we seeing in that area? Can there be applied in medicines? So many questions to ask our various interviewees today, but we'll try pace ourselves after the break to try unpack this very complex issue, but that needs more understanding from an ordinary person's perspective rather. But let's take a quick break. We'll be back.
Welcome to Change Your Game here on Channel Africa, the African perspective. We're coming to you from Johannesburg in South Africa. My name is Asanda Peta.
What GDF Forum is about and what an opportunity it provides specifically for the audience of Change Your Game.
At Change Your Game, we believe entrepreneurs are the key drivers of tomorrow's African innovations and essential to creating a thriving African economy.
More support, just like invest more in young creatives and entrepreneurship, but actually do it, don't just talk about it, actually do it, you know, because there are a lot of creative minds, there are a lot of intelligent human beings in our country, so I think we should invest more in that and take it seriously, because it's a real thing.
Catch us every Friday at 900 hours Central African time with Channel Africa, the African perspective.
You are listening to Channel Africa, South Africa's external service. You're joining us from Johannesburg, South Africa's, where we're broadcasting from South Africa's Broadcasting Corporation. Today, we're speaking on artificial intelligence, a series we've been focusing on in various parts, looking at different sections of artificial intelligence. And today, we're focusing on the impact of AI in health and the medical center. Joining us is Dr. Anna Lewis, woke up early this morning in the United States. We appreciate that. She's a research associate at the E.J. Safra Center for Ethics at Harvard University. Peter Reed is also with us, head of artificial intelligence at Mint Group. Last but not least, Mashandra Naidu is joining us for the second time for this conversation of AI. He's a PhD fellow at the University of KwaZulu-Natal's School of Law. Dr. Anna Lewis, let me come back to you in terms of looking at the specifics in terms of your area. I know that because you work in areas of bioethics and looking at the ethical areas and legal social issues around genomic technologies, there's a big conversation around biobanks in the United States, genome data being accessible and how it's being stored and how it's being analyzed. And I know that there's a huge area of artificial intelligence in light of this area that you specialize in. Can you tell us more about this specific area of health and how artificial intelligence features into it?
I actually don't think that artificial intelligence is impacting the genomic space that much. It's not one of the areas, it's one of the areas that is definitely overhyped and you read about it, but in practice, it's not deployed that much. We have older school algorithms, i.e. ones which don't need to actively learn from the data. I think the applications of AI are almost all of the ones which are approved for use are based around imaging data with some text data and then voices coming online too. But from the ethics perspective, there are various like big key themes around the use of this data and the application of AI in healthcare. And one of the big ones, as I mentioned, is what is the actual impact on individuals of the use of this technology? And that's the same debate that we also have for a lot of genomic technologies. Another one is, are the technologies treating different groups fairly? But we have to think carefully about what we mean by fairly. And that is something in common across some genomic technologies and also various applications of AI in healthcare. Another one might be this idea of transparency and how important is it for end users to be able to understand what an AI agent has recommended. So those are some sort of common themes that we see across these different application areas.
And in terms of... Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to pick up on something that Peter was saying about the disillusionment. And I'm not so confident that we've entered out of that valley. I think we still see way more hype than application area. And I think that there continue to be some really big flops. So, for example, Google made a foray into AI in healthcare. Google's very well placed to develop and test AI in healthcare. And this was in the detection of diabetic retinopathy on the basis of photos of the retina. So this is a very common side effect a very common thing that people who suffer from diabetes can also be diagnosed with. And it's diagnosed based on images taken of the back of the eye. And unless it's treated or preventive measures are taken, it can cause blindness. So this looks like a really, really great application area for AI in medicine. And not just in the Western world, but particularly in resource-limited countries. And so they, with great fanfare, announced the results of sort of predictive performance of this algorithm that they had. But then when they actually tested it in real-world settings, and in particular they were testing it in Thailand, it really didn't work as advertised. So we still see really, really high profile flops like that, where the hype just was, you know, things don't live up anywhere near to the hype that they were built up to.
Well, Peter, do you want to speak to that? Because I think that could foster the conversation forward in terms of these kind of debates that are happening in the health and medical sector in light of artificial intelligence.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I completely support what the doctor was saying there.
Sorry, Peter, do you have your line Are you listening to the program in the background? Because I can hear an echo somewhere.
No. Can you disconnect and reconnect?
Okay, let me see if... I can hear you now. Go ahead.
I was saying I completely support what the doctor was saying. The hype almost always outstrips the actual implementation, and not always. And there's some fantastic use cases where AI has really come to the fore in the healthcare space. But often for a variety of factors, the hype exceeds what gets implemented on the ground. And that's damaging in two ways. The one is that the implementation then and fails. And the second one is that subsequent AI technologies are not considered because of this. So there is a reasonably high abandonment factor, as with any brand new technology. Just to kind of put that into perspective, we've done one or two projects that are really on the cutting edge of the example that Dr. used there. For example, you know, checking scans and, making predictions based on data. But the projects that tend to be more effective are the more pedestrian implementations. So, you know, those cases where, for example, we're using a little touch of AI to reduce the queuing times in public clinics. Now, it's not flashy and spectacular and solving a problem that no one's ever seen before, but it's an incredibly prevalent problem, especially in South Africa, in rural areas. So to take the two contrasting examples, I think that the potential for a project that could identify, you know, diseases from retinal scans, for example, is incredible. And that's a mid to long-term potential across the whole world. But using something as kind of run-of-the-mill as face to plot and manage a course of patients through a public clinic and reduce the queue times from 8 hours to 6 hours, those have more traction. And again, they're not flashy and exciting, but they're a great use of the technology. I also think that in South Africa specifically, in Southern Africa, we're in a very unique position because we have access to Western development. In AI specifically, we've seen the cycle of research to implementation drop considerably. It used to be sort of a 10 to 15 year cycle from a research paper coming out to the actual implementation. And certainly the large tech providers have reduced that down where you could see a research paper coming out and within months, that kind of technology implemented in a production ready way. So that's been fantastic. So we have two things that are going for us, three things, I think. The one is ready access to this kind of technology that's been developed largely in Western and Eastern countries. The second one is an interesting slew of problems that relate specifically to the African paradigm, such as resource scarcity, rural and transport problems. And the third one is a very strong entrepreneurial spirit. And for me, this is the confluence of which is going to allow for this kind of tech in healthcare. So where we have young entrepreneurs who are considering the unique problems that we have in South Africa, and I would say in any developing country, but then taking and applying these research problems from the developed world. And that's, I think, where the opportunity comes, where we're going to improve a lot of lives. But again, the sense that I get is that that's going to start on the ground up. We're going to read about and be very excited about projects that can detect, potential heart attacks 6 weeks before it happens. But the projects that are actually going to make the difference on the ground are those that are chopping 5 or 10% off a queue or increasing the ability to pre-order ARV meds by 6% so that they're not lying in stock, et cetera. And I think that's typical of any new tech new technology that emerges, where the news headlines talk about the really exciting parts, but actually the bits that start making a difference are those that creep in under the floors and slowly become entrenched.
Mishandran, your thoughts, because it seems like there is that kind of oversell of artificial intelligence, but it's actually more complex than we in the media make it. Mishandran, are you there? Well, I think we've lost Mishandran there. We'll see if we can dial him back there. But let me continue this conversation with you, Dr. Annette Lewis, in terms of, these particular limitations. Are there a good thing, or could they propel us to channel our efforts to more progressive avenues or pathways?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. A lot of the challenges are around the data that you're using to train the AI. And one of the big issues we have is that a lot of that data comes from certain types of people, typically people living in Western countries, which are well resourced, etc. And then if you try and deploy an algorithm trained on that data elsewhere, you might not get nearly as good results. So I think part of the story is about getting data from those communities where you want to deploy whatever tool you want to deploy. And to get data, you have to think very carefully about how to do that in an ethical way. Are you going to be doing it as part of a research study if you're one of these kind of front office as opposed to back office, as Peter was talking about, these different areas of application? Getting medical data can be a sensitive topic. So you're going to get that via a research study. In that case, how are you going to run it? Or how else are you going to access the data that might be most relevant? And so I think people taking a really active interest in ethically sourcing the most appropriate data is a really key topic. And another one that we've learned is in order for AI to have any beneficial impact, that's very sensitive to how it's integrated into the workflows of teams in the care of patients. And that can look, those workflows can look very different by different locale. So I think what that does is suggest the need for much closer work integrated with the communities that are ultimately hoped to be the beneficiaries of these technologies, to really understand those workflows, understand the pain points, understand how they're anticipating the reaction of patients and that sort of thing. So at the moment, I think we've got a lot of work on the just algorithm development and the obsession with getting the sensitivity and specificity to be as good as radiologists based in Boston or something like that. But we need to expand, at least in the research field, much more broadly than that, and really put the humans first. Humans that the technologies are going to impact. What are their workflows like? What is the patient interaction like? And that kind of work is very, very different kind of work. It's not done by computer scientists. It's done by other sorts of people. And in my view, we need way more of that kind of work, even compared to the algorithm development. But that's not, to use Peter's terms, that's not the flashy stuff on the academic side.
All right, I think we have Mishandran Naidu back. Mishandran, I don't know, are you there? Can you hear me clearly on your side?
Yes, I can hear you now. My apologies, I'm not sure why the call is dropping.
Okay, no problem. But Mishandran, let's look at where we are right now in terms of these limitations and challenges and how they can be actually overcome in light of the fact that we need a more comprehensive approach to artificial intelligence, not just flashy projects, but those that are very comprehensive in light of community engagement is something that's also missing, as highlighted by Dr. Anna Lewis, and also researching the end user benefits.
Yes, very much so. I agree with Dr. Lewis on that regards. You definitely need to build up the trust in these technologies with the community at large in order to really facilitate the uptake of these technologies. So the only way to do that really, well, one of the key ways to do that is to engage in community just discussions and really just educating people, because as the other presenters mentioned as well, it's not the more flashy versions of the technologies that will really make the biggest impact. It's the smaller ones, like the ones that use natural language processing. Just, for example, communicating with patients, helping translate complex terminology into languages that they understand. In public healthcare, for example, if you're going to the pharmacy to collect your medication, it's not very often that you'll find someone who may speak the language that you are used to at home. So just having an AI system there that can really translate things to you and really just tell you how to use your medication and to monitor if you're using your medication accordingly will really go a long way in assisting with some of the public health goals that we have.
And staying with you, Ms. Chandran, in terms of the world that we live in that is becoming more health-centric, mainly because of how COVID-19 has impacted public life and our perspective around health, how do you think this area of artificial intelligence could actually inform, or the environment rather, how would it inform the atmosphere of how we utilize artificial intelligence?
So, as you know, with the COVID-19 pandemic, a lot of work went into developing AI systems that revolved around surveillance. So basically tracking people's movements, tracking where the most infections and things like that were present. And in the future, AI technologies definitely would be used for more and more of not just assisting in these pandemics, but also really preventing them. But of course, that itself poses a lot of challenges regarding, privacy, informational privacy, and just an issue of state power. So that's where legal regulation comes in. And these are the issues that lawmakers really need to take into account when thinking about artificial intelligence in the public space. But it really will impact every single aspect of society going forward in the future. I mean, there's things known as smart cities now. And these are the more flashy aspects, but there really are certain things that we need to consider as we're going forward.
Peter, let me come back to you and ask that question back to you in terms of how this pandemic environment that we find ourselves in can inform the utilization of artificial intelligence. Just a brief one, because I'd like to pose the same question to Dr. Anna Lewis before we wrap up. We only have a few minutes left.
Sure. So we've seen the pandemic impact in a number of different ways. The one is, I believe, it just accelerated what was happening before, which is a more distributed way of work and a heavier reliance on technology. And that's a good thing. I think we've got more connectivity, more focus on distributed learning, consultation, etc. So telemedicine, for example, just an acceleration of what happened before. And then brand new technologies coming in. Things like the surveillance and like increased use of temperature scanners, mask detectors, facial recognition, and then graph networks, so essentially associations with people. I think that both of these areas are good, are fantastic. My biggest takeaway, unfortunately, is that AI, especially in our setting, is just a technology and it's therefore subject to the constraints of all other technological programs, which is political will, infighting, corruption, etc. So I would say the advances have been great, both in the sort of evolution and revolution space. But we have found, unfortunately, implementation of projects, COVID-specific, COVID-tangential, or just normal projects, are still subject to the same forces of implementation as any other tech project in the healthcare space, specifically in the public healthcare space.
Dr. Lewis, your final thought in light of that final question?
On fairness and equity. So we had massive discussions about who should get ventilators. That was in the early part of the pandemic. And then who should be prioritized for vaccines. And at least here in the US, when you're talking about the technology that you have and who you can help, we realize that so often we're not helping those who are most disadvantaged and those who most need the help within our societies. And I think the same lens and the same conversation has to be applied around AI. It's who's going to benefit and who's going to benefit disproportionately and or who might be harmed disproportionately. And I think COVID has really put a lens on those questions, the intersection of technology, fairness and equity.
Definitely. Thank you all for giving us your time. And I think this program makes us understand that we're still at the early stages of AI in health and also in different parts of our lives. And we should actually get ourselves slowing ourselves down to understand these benefits. And thank you for helping us understand it. I also appreciate the language adopted by all of you, making us understand as laymen in these particular areas. Thank you to Dr. and a Lewis Research Associate at the E.J. Safra Center for Ethics at Harvard University. Thank you as well to Mashandra Naidu, a PhD fellow at the University of KwaZulu-Natal School of Law. Thanks to Peter Reed. He's the head of artificial intelligence at Mint Group, which is a Microsoft Gold IT consultancy. Thank you all for your time. We really appreciate it.